Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
I do hold responsible in the sense that they're supplying the weapons to the people of Israel.
Widening war? President Biden says he holds Iran responsible for the drone killing of three U.S. soldiers at a base in Jordan, and that he's decided on a U.S. response. Then a shocking raid on a Jenin hospital by undercover Israeli forces dressed as doctors and Muslim women in headscarves kills three Palestinians. We'll go to Ramallah to speak with Palestinian physician and politician Mustafa Barghouti. And thousands of Israelis gather in Jerusalem for a major conference calling for the Israeli resettlement of Gaza.
We are settling our land from width to length, controlling it and fighting terror always, and bringing, with God's help, security to all of Israel. You know what the answer is. Without settlement, there is no security.
We'll go to Tel Aviv to speak with an Israeli reporter who covered the conference. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. New satellite imagery shows at least 144,000 buildings in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed since the Israeli bombardment began nearly 4 months ago. That's more than half of all buildings in the Gaza Strip, including mosques, schools, universities, and cultural sites. Corey Scher of the City University of New York told the BBC, "We've done work over Ukraine. We've also looked at Aleppo and other cities, but the extent and the pace of damage is remarkable. I've never seen this much damage appear so quickly," he said. In other news, the heads of multiple UN organizations are warning Gaza will face catastrophic consequences if the Palestinian refugee agency UNRWA runs out of money. The United States and over a dozen other nations have paused funding for the agency after Israel accused 12 of UNRWA's 13,000 employees in Gaza of taking part in the Hamas attack on October 7th. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is vowing to continue the war in Gaza despite reports negotiators may be close to reaching a deal to pause fighting for at least 6 weeks to make time for Israel and Hamas to swap captives. Health officials in the occupied West Bank have denounced Israel for sending in a team of undercover assassins into a Jenin hospital to execute three Palestinian militants in a hospital room Tuesday. The Israeli special forces were disguised as medical workers in scrubs and Muslim women wearing headscarves. Palestinian officials say one of the men killed was recovering in the hospital after being paralyzed from an Israeli drone strike in October. Naji Nazar is the medical director at Ibn Sina Hospital.
They killed the three youth, Basil and Mohammed Ghazawi and Mohammed Jalamni, in their room while they were sleeping on their beds in the room. They were killed in cold blood with direct gunshots to the head.
In Washington, State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller refused to condemn the Israeli raid on the Jenin Hospital.
I'm not able to speak to the facts of the operation. You'd have to pass some kind of legal judgment, know all of the facts of the operation. But as a general matter, they do have the right to carry out operations to bring terrorists to justice, but they need to be conducted
including in a hospital.
So we want them to conduct their operations in compliance with their national humanitarian law.
Israel's admitted it's begun flooding tunnels in Gaza with seawater, despite warnings from the United Nations that the move could damage Palestinian drinking water and sewage systems. Israel said Hamas and other Palestinian groups have built as many as 450 miles of tunnels where many leaders of Hamas are believed to live, they say. In related news, the mother of an Israeli hostage who died in Gaza has accused the Israeli military of killing her son by pumping poison gas into a tunnel where he was being held. In December, Dr. Mayan Sherman said Israeli officials had told her that her son, Ron, had been murdered by Hamas in Gaza. But she started questioning what happened after a pathologist revealed a CT scan showed Ron's body had no injuries. In a Facebook post, Dr. Sherman wrote, quote, "The inquiry's findings, Ron was indeed murdered, not by Hamas, not by stray bullets, and not in an exchange of fire. This was deliberate murder, bombing with poison gas," she said. And news from Israel. A House panel in the Knesset overwhelmingly voted Tuesday to expel lawmaker Ofer Khasif for signing a petition supporting South Africa's genocide case against Israel. Khasif will now face a vote from the full Knesset. Khasif is an Israeli Jewish member of the left-wing Arab-Jewish Hadash party who has repeatedly called for a ceasefire in Gaza. Visit democracynow.org to see our recent interviews with Ofer Khasif. Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley has called for the U.S. to assassinate Iranian leaders after three U.S. troops were killed in a drone strike on a base in Jordan. Haley made the comment in an interview on Fox News.
First, you do the sanctions and you take out a couple of their leaders. That's the way
in their country.
In their, if they're in their country, or you do like Soleimani when they left the country, you figure out where they are. Our special operations can do that. And then you take them out.
The presidential candidate is the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations under President Trump. On Tuesday, President Biden said he's made a decision on how to respond to the drone strike, but did not disclose details. He accused Iran of supplying the weapons used in the attack, but said, quote, "I don't think we need a wider war in the Middle East." A former IRS contractor has been sentenced to 5 years in prison for leaking tax records that reveal Donald Trump, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and other wealthy figures pay little to no federal income tax. The whistleblower, Charles Littlejohn, leaked the documents to The New York Times and ProPublica. Prosecutors accused Littlejohn of taking a job at the Internal Revenue Service in 2017 with the intent of accessing President Trump's tax records. Littlejohn's attorney, Lisa Massing, said, quote, "He committed this offense out of a deep moral belief that the American people had a right to know the information, and sharing it was the only way to effect change," she said. An Argentinian court has overturned labor regulations proposed by newly elected far-right President Javier Milei that would have cut benefits and made it easier to fire workers who participate in union strikes and blockades. The three-judge panel argued such reforms are unconstitutional, stating they first must be approved by Argentina's Congress. The ruling comes just days after labor unions led tens of thousands of protesters in a general strike against Milei's austerity policies that have led to the severe devaluation of the Argentine peso and other massive spending cuts. Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan and his wife have been sentenced to 14 years in prison for selling gifts they had received while he was in office. The sentence came just a day after Imran Khan, who's already in prison, received a separate sentence of 10 years after being convicted of leaking state secrets by waving a classified Pakistani document during a public rally. It was later revealed the document exposed how the U.S. government encouraged Pakistani officials to remove Khan from office in 2022 after he took a neutral stance on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Imran Khan was ousted from office in April 2022 after lawmakers passed a no-confidence vote. On Tuesday, supporters of Khan denounced the Pakistani judiciary for targeting him just ahead of next week's elections.
Today's Cypher case verdict has broken records of injustice, a bogus case that was preceded in a manner that the arrest on the first day was unlawful and unconstitutional. The charge was framed in a way that was unlawful and unconstitutional. In this case, three orders of the High Court were violated, one after another. It was preceded behind closed doors.
The The Republican-controlled House Homeland Security Committee has approved two articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, moving the House closer to impeaching a cabinet official for the first time in nearly 150 years. Republicans have accused Mayorkas of failing to uphold immigration laws at the U.S.-Mexico border. If the full House votes to impeach Mayorkas, the articles would then be referred to the Democratic-controlled Senate. Democratic lawmakers have denounced the Republican impeachment effort. In other news from Capitol Hill, Democratic Congressmember Cori Bush has acknowledged she's under a Justice Department investigation for allegedly misusing campaign funds. In a statement, Bush said, quote, "In recent months, right-wing organizations have lodged baseless complaints against me, peddling notions that I have misused campaign funds to pay for personal security services. That simply is not true," she said. Last year, the Office of Congressional Ethics investigated Bush's campaign spending and voted to dismiss the allegations. Bush's security needs increased after she faced numerous death threats. In Ohio, a 20-year-old white supremacist has been sentenced to 18 years in prison after he firebombed a church where two drag events were scheduled. Federal prosecutors said the man, Amen Penny, was a member of a White Lives Matter group. In October, Penny pleaded guilty to targeting the Community Church of Chesterland. Meanwhile, Utah has become the latest state to enact legislation banning transgender people from using bathrooms that match their gender identity. At least 10 other states have passed similar laws, including Florida, Idaho, Alabama, and Arkansas. The New York City Council Tuesday overwhelmingly approved two police and jail reform measures, overriding vetoes by New York City Mayor Eric Adams. One bill would force New York police officers to report the race, gender, and age of people they interact with or stop for questioning. The other bill would limit the amount of time people in custody are placed in solitary confinement in the city's troubled jail system. Council members supporting the override included the newly elected Harlem Councilmember Yusuf Salam, who is one of five Black and Latinx teenagers wrongfully convicted of the 1989 beating and rape of a white woman in Central Park. Salam spent 7 years in prison, including in solitary confinement, before being exonerated. On Tuesday, he delivered emotional remarks before voting aye.
I vote aye because today the New York City Council is fighting for the implementation of two bills that would bring generational change in our criminal justice system. If these laws were in place in 1989, I vote aye.
Yusuf Salam's vote came just days after he was pulled over by police while driving with his wife and daughters. He said the officer never responded to his request to know why he was being stopped. Later, the officer would say it was because his windows were tinted too dark and raise the issue of him having an out-of-state license plate. In Texas, a man sued Macy's department store and sunglass hut after facial recognition technology falsely identified him as a robber, leading to his imprisonment and sexual assault while in detention. 61-year-old Harvey Murphy Jr. was jailed for 2 weeks before being released after authorities confirmed he was not even in the state of Texas when the robberies occurred at a Houston sunglass hut and Macy's store. Murphy's lawyers say he was raped by three prisoners while in jail. In labor news, UPS has announced it'll cut 12,000 jobs this year. This comes just months after a labor deal was reached averting a potential strike. In other labor news, American Federation of Teachers has adopted a resolution supporting a ceasefire in Gaza. The union represents more than 1.7 million teachers and staff. The leaders of the National Education Association have also called for a ceasefire. Chilean artist Javier Salinas, formerly known as Papas Fritas, led a peaceful protest at a Starbucks coffee shop in Santiago last week, ordering over $1,000 worth of coffee with the names of 300 children killed by Israeli forces in Gaza. The names of the children were read out loud over the span of about 2 hours. Salinas named his action $1,198.80 for the last 300 last breaths of hope.
Ragna Zacharias.
Muhammad Ali.
Yeah. Muhammad Ali.
Anna Muhammad.
Yeah. Anna Muhammad.
Starbucks has faced widespread boycotts across the globe over its refusal to support a ceasefire in Gaza. Chile is home to more than 500,000 people of Palestinian descent, thought to be the largest Palestinian diaspora community outside the Middle East. And Puerto Rican Broadway icon and Tony Award-winning artist Chita Rivera has died in New York at the age of 91. She began her career in Broadway in the 1950s, performing in dozens of roles, including in West Side Story. In 2009, she received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Barack Obama. New York Congressmember Nidia Velasquez, the first Puerto Rican woman to serve in the U.S. Congress, said on social media, quote, Chita Rivera was a trailblazer and Broadway legend who took pride in her Puerto Rican heritage and helped pave the way for other Latina artists. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Iran has threatened to, quote, decisively respond to any U.S. attack on Iran following President Joe Biden's linking of Tehran to the drone attack on Sunday that killed three U.S. soldiers and wounded 40 at a military base in Jordan. President Biden announced Tuesday he had decided how to respond to the drone attack, though he did not say what that response would be. Outside the White House, Biden responded to a reporter's question on whether he holds Iran responsible for the deaths of the three U.S. soldiers.
I do hold responsible in the sense that they're supplying the weapons to the people who did it. I don't think we need a wider war in the Middle East. That's not what I'm looking for.
Iran has denied any involvement in the attack, which targeted Tower 22, a secret U.S. base in northeastern Jordan near the Syrian border. Responsibility for the strike was claimed by the Islamic Resistance in Iraq, a term used to describe a loose coalition of militias that oppose U.S. support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Meanwhile, a U.S. Navy destroyer in the Gulf of Aden shot down an anti-ship cruise missile on Tuesday launched by the Houthis in Yemen, the latest attack targeting U.S. forces in the region. For more, we're joined in Washington, D.C. by Trita Parsi, executive vice president of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He's authored three books on U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East with a particular focus on Iran and Israel. Trita, welcome back to Democracy Now!. If you can talk about what took place at this remote base, the killing of the three U.S. soldiers, injuring of about 40 others, and the drumbeat by Republicans, as well as Democrats, as well as the media in the United States, for President Biden to militarily respond. What would this mean?
It obviously depends on how Biden responds. If Biden is thinking about responding in terms of attacking Iran on Iranian soil, then as the warning came from Tehran, it's very, very likely that there will be a forceful response by the Iranians, which will bring the United States right into a shooting war with Iranians, which is something that the administration says that they have been seeking to avoid. They have been repeating that message several times in the last couple of days. I think it is important to note that all of this was predicted. From the very beginning, it was clear, as long as there was no material pressure on Israel to cease its bombardment in Gaza, this eventually would lead to a situation in which the United States would be faced with an attack that actually had left Americans killed. If you take a look at the statistics, there were about 60 attacks by these Iraqi militias against U.S. troops and bases during the first 2.5 years of Biden's presidency. Since October 17th, however, when Israel went into Gaza, there's been more than 160 attacks just in these last 100 days. At some point, one of those attacks was going to kill Americans. And the president essentially accepted this risk. continue to allow Israel to bombard Gaza, in his own words, indiscriminately, knowing very well that the game of statistic was simply such that at some point the Iraqi militias would succeed and Americans would die. Now we are in that situation. Instead of raising questions about this entire strategy as to why we are putting U.S. troops at risk in order for Israel to continue to indiscriminately bomb and kill and slaughter people in Gaza, instead, there's been this frenzy about pushing us further into war. And this is how these endless wars begin. Tactical responses to attacks by the other side that in the moment may come across as legitimate, because, of course, these attacks against U.S. troops are unacceptable, without any recognition, however, that this is leading us into a war whose aims we have not defined, whose exits we cannot envision.
But, Trito, when you say that these are legitimate questions of attacks on U.S. troops, but what the heck are U.S. troops continuing to do in, be in these countries? This Tower 22, for instance, the U.S. troops in Syria clearly have no authorization from Congress to be there. And importantly, in Iraq, the Iraqi government has been calling for the United States to withdraw the few troops it still has in Iraq from the country. But the U.S. is not disposed to even listen to the government of the country in which its troops are located.
You're absolutely right. These are the moments where these questions should be asked, which is, why are we there in the first place? As you noted, the troops in Syria do not have any legal authorization to be there by the U.S. Congress. The troops in Iraq, you know, for such a long time, we've said that they should be pulled out. Nothing has happened yet. And the essential pretext for keeping them there, which is to fight ISIS, has long expired, because ISIS has been weakened. It's not been completely eliminated. But these countries, who have far greater stake in the defeat of ISIS, are now capable of handling that on their own without direct U.S. involvement and certainly direct U.S. presence in that fight. So we have to really ask ourselves, why do we continue to have a broader policy in the Middle East in which we are positioning more than 50,000 American troops in various places in the region right now, in which they're essentially made to be sitting ducks and tripwires, and a single attack against them can lead to several deaths, which then again immediately will cause the rise of these calls for a broader war in the region. This is to the detriment of our own interests.
And this whole issue of blaming Iran as the directly responsible for these attacks, every time we hear of one of these resistance groups, is always with the adjective the Iran-backed or the Iran-financed group. Is it your sense that these groups have their own independent life, or is the Biden administration correct in ascribing all of the real motivation coming from Iran?
I think there's two exaggerated narratives here. One is the Iranian one, in which they're essentially claiming that they have no control over these groups at all and that they're completely independent. That is not true. But also the other narrative, the Washington narrative, is not true, one that claims that the Iranians completely control these different groups and that they have no agency of their own. Clearly, they do have agency of their own. On numerous occasions, they have acted against the expressed wishes of the Iranians, particularly in the case of the Houthis. And even in the case of these Iraqi militias, what has happened just in the last 48 hours is that clearly there's been a lot of backdoor diplomacy between the Iranians and the United States. And now the Iraqi militias have come out and said that they're ceasing their attacks on the U.S. troops at this point. And it's clear that the Iranians have put some pressure on them to essentially de-escalate. I would suspect that the option that the president is considering right now is to do some form of attack inside of Iraq or Syria, probably give the other side ample heads up in order to evacuate those specific buildings. Nevertheless, be able to say that he has responded, make sure that it's not too damaging, but sufficiently strong to be able to calm some of the voices in Washington, but then leave it at that and ensure that there's some de-escalation afterwards. In the short run, that may work, and it might not be a bad plan. In the longer run, however, as long as there is no ceasefire in Gaza, it is really difficult to foresee that these attacks against U.S. troops will end indefinitely. As long as there's no ceasefire, I suspect that they will resume at some point, which means that a continued warfare in Gaza by the Israelis is a direct threat to U.S. national interest because of the manner that it puts U.S. troops at risk in the region.
Trita Parsi, your colleague at Quincy, Bill Hartung, wrote on X, quote, on the question of Iran's role in the deaths of three U.S. servicemen, President Biden said, I do hold them responsible in the sense that they're supplying the weapons to the people who did it. Does he feel the same way about the 26,000 deaths caused by U.S. weapons in Gaza? Bill Hartung asked. Your response, Trita.
Well, I think Bill is absolutely correct. And I think whether we agree or not with that argument, we have to recognize that is the sentiment throughout the Middle East right now and probably throughout the larger part of the world. In which the United States is held responsible for what Israel is doing, not just because providing all of these weapons. More than 10,000 tons of weapons have been shipped since October 7th. President has bypassed Congress twice to get them to Israel even faster, but also because of the very active effort by the Biden administration to block a ceasefire that has twice happened in the Security Council. That means that the large part of the world do see the United States as directly responsible for this. And that, again, is a very severe to the very severe detriment of U.S. interests itself and the U.S.'s global standing.
Trita Parsi, we want to thank you for being with us, Executive Vice President of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Coming up, a shocking raid on a Jenin hospital in the occupied West Bank by undercover Israeli forces dressed as doctors and Muslim women in headscarves kills three Palestinians. We'll speak with Dr. Mustafa Barghouti in Ramallah. Stay with us.
Over the ashes of blood march the civilized soldiers. Over the ruins of the French fortress of a failure. Over the silent screams of the dead and the dying. But please be reassured, we seek no wider war. The treaties were signed. The country was split into sections, but growing numbers of prisons were built for protection, rapidly filling with people who called for election. But please be reassured, we seek no
wider war. By Phil Oakes. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thousands of Palestinians took part in a funeral procession Tuesday in the occupied West Bank for three Palestinians killed by Israeli assassins in a shocking undercover raid on a hospital in Jenin. Surveillance footage from the Ibn Sina Hospital shows around a dozen undercover Israeli forces storming the hospital, guns raised, wearing white doctor's coats or hospital scrubs, and dressed as Muslim women wearing headscarves. One of the undercover troops carried a rifle in one arm and a folded wheelchair in the other. The Israeli military claimed the three men it targeted were involved in planning an imminent attack and were using the hospital as a hideout without providing evidence. Hospital officials said there was no exchange of fire and that the three men were asleep, indicating the raid was a targeted killing. One of the three men killed had been receiving treatment at the hospital since being injured in an Israeli drone attack on October 25th and was partially paralyzed. This is Naji Nazal, medical director at the Ibn Sina Hospital.
They killed the three youth, Basil and Mohammed Ghazawi and Mohammed Jalamni, in their room while they were sleeping on their beds in the room. They were killed in cold blood with direct gunshots to the head.
Israeli soldiers and settlers have killed more than 380 Palestinians in the West Bank since October 7th. while more than 6,300 people have been arrested. For more, we go to Ramallah, where we're joined by the Palestinian physician, activist, politician Mustafa Barghouti. He serves as general secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. Welcome back to Democracy Now, Dr. Barghouti. If you can start off by laying out exactly what you understand about this assault on the Jenin hospital, who was killed,